welcome back to another bonus episode from the Infamous Podcast. Celebrating 50 years of Trek. Today we are talking about
Star Trek: The Voyage Home,
number 4.
Yeah. Oh, Forgot to throw the 4 in there because
Star Trek IV.
That's when we still were numbering Star Trek movies.
Well, now we just call them Star Trek 2009 and Into Darkness.
No.
I know, I'm kidding. Anyway,
Into Darkness and Generations and
yep.
First Contact.
Mm-hmm. All right, so Star Trek IV, The Voyage Home is a 1986 American science fiction film released by Paramount Pictures. Shocker, Paramount released a Star Wars picture.
I'm sorry, they released a what picture?
Star Trek picture.
You said Star Wars.
Did I? Yeah. Well, whatever. I was singing the Star Wars.
Nerd alert.
So, this is the 4th feature film based on Star Trek and is the sequel to Star Trek III, The Search for Spock. And it completes the story arc that began with The Wrath of Khan,
mm-hmm.
which was Star Trek II, if you're not aware.
What?
The fun thing about this one is it's a time travel movie.
Yeah.
What? Star Trek II and time travel? That's just unheard
of. To save the planet, we must go back in time.
And they had to go back in time because there was an alien probe in their future, or in their present, trying to make contact with the now extinct or then extinct, soon to be extinct. I have a headache.
What are you trying to say?
The future extinct humpback whales. I was trying to make a really bad joke there.
And oh, okay.
You weren't laughing. So now I feel bad about myself.
You should.
And this alien probe is wreaking havoc on the planet Earth, trying to destroy it because it's pissed off because its friends, the humpback whales, are gone.
Well, it's literally like throwing off EMP pulses.
Yep.
And, you know, aiming at communications at the ocean, mm-hmm. which is upsetting the entire atmosphere mm-hmm. of the planet.
Yeah, and the whales aren't there to do their whale calls.
Yep.
You should do some whale calls for us.
No, I shouldn't, and neither should you. If you do a whale call, I'm going to pretend I'm the Japanese poacher that is going to be poaching you.
Nice. All right. So this is my favorite of all the Star Trek movies.
Yeah.
I have watched this one more than any of the other ones.
Okay.
Whenever I'm somewhere new, I will look at whoever I'm with and I will say, can you show me where the nuclear vessels are?
Uh-huh.
Just because it makes me laugh. And okay. most of the time they look at me like, huh?
What's wrong with you?
Lots. But the cool thing about this one is they go back to 1986.
Mm-hmm.
The other fun thing I do based on this movie is every once in a while I would sit down on the computer, I'll pick up a mouse and I'll go, hello, computer. Which makes me laugh and nobody gets
everybody
what I'm doing.
Like, what's they're a like, mouse?
No kidding. this was directed by Leonard Nimoy.
Yeah.
The screenplay was by Steve Merson, Peter Kirkus, Nicholas Meyer, and Harve Bennett.
Right.
The story was by Harve Bennett and Leonard Nimoy. I have to say, of the original cast members,
mm-hmm.
Leonard Nimoy is probably the most talented,
mm-hmm.
just hands down across the board. I have not watched For the Love of Spock yet.
Right. Yeah, I haven't either.
I definitely plan on buying it at some point and watching it because it looks like I'll probably cry watching it. I'm not gonna lie there.
Man up. What's wrong with you?
I'm gonna get all weepy.
You're really illogical.
I'm so illogical. So
you
this one
humans and your emotions.
This one kicks off pretty much directly after Search for Spock.
Yeah.
Spock has most of his stuff back in his head, but it's still processing.
Right.
McCoy is super cranky and cantankerous and
nothing different about that.
And Kirk just wants to save the planet.
So, I mean, starting out as the probe shows up, debilitates a ship, and then we go to Vulcan and the crew's still mm-hmm. on Vulcan.
Right.
Obviously, they know they're in trouble.
Yep.
And that with their stolen Klingon ship, which
yeah.
McCoy names the HMS Bounty.
Yep.
So it's pretty much they're heading home
mm-hmm.
back to Earth
to face court-martial.
Yeah, to face whatever is going to happen to them for everything they did in Star Trek III, stealing the Enterprise, destroying the Enterprise, sabotaging the Excelsior,
mm-hmm.
You know, locking up people that the assaulting Starfleet officers,
killing a bunch of Klingons, yeah. which they were told not to, yeah. specifically told not to yeah, do, not to engage.
It's just one of those things where it's pretty much them heading home, and on their way home, they start noticing that there aren't patrol ships where there should be patrol ships. Mm-hmm. And then the distress call comes from Earth.
Right.
From the president of the Federation
mm-hmm.
saying, you know, don't come to Earth. Earth's dangerous, mm-hmm. you know, and plays back the sound that's being made by the probe. And Spock being Spock is like, well, I'm going to adjust the sound here. And, yeah. You know, it sounds like it could be this. And, you know, they're playing around with the sound because it's aimed at the oceans. Mm-hmm. And Uhura is doing what Uhura should do.
Yeah.
Knowing, you know. It's like Uhura's on the board messing around with stuff and like, you know, could you do that at an ocean depth? And she's like, yeah, boop, 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 pushing her buttons.
Yep.
And it's like, you know, I think Uhura had more in this movie to do than she did the last three movies.
The Uhura Chekhov buddy cop
yeah.
movie yep. is something that needed to happen when yeah. like these two could still pull it off.
Yeah.
They were one of the better parts.
Well, yeah,
of a good movie. Don't get me wrong.
1986. You know? She's African.
And he's Russian.
Russian, and they're on the street asking where nuclear vessels.
Can you
are.
Show us where the nuclear vessels are?
I go up to a San Francisco cop and ask him, and he's yeah. just standing there like, "Why are they doing this?
You're the worst spy ever,
yeah,
dude."
Yeah.
And then someone tells them it's in Alameda.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, okay.
Where is Alameda? I do not know where Alameda is.
But, yeah. You know, they do the old slingshot around the sun trick.
Which always works.
Always. I mean, that's the go-to right there. Even in the Bird of Prey, which is like a pinto, essentially.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then when they land on Earth, they cloak. They land in Golden Gate Park. And then they realize, oh, we don't have enough power to get back.
Right.
And, you know, so there's no dilithium
yeah.
at that point. And so they have to go and find nuclear power.
Right. It's
so.
Literally like just the everything that could go wrong situation. Mm-hmm. But, you know, spirits are high.
Yep.
We're going to succeed at our mission
of any Star Trek property. This is the group at this point in this movie that has the most like can do attitude.
Well, and it's
like,
let's
get it done. Go team.
It's the most. Star Trek, like mm-hmm. original series
yeah.
attitude.
Oh yeah.
Like just we're gonna do what we gotta do. We gotta save home.
We're a bunch of explorers.
Yeah.
We're here to learn yeah. shit and save Earth.
Yeah.
You know, that's like
it's pretty much like, you know, we don't know, you know, in the Star Trek universe, a lot of the records were lost because mm-hmm. of World War III happening in the early 21st century. So it's like we don't know where we're coming into.
Right.
Kirk literally tells them on the bridge, yeah. we don't know what we're coming into. You know, just be careful.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Spock, cover those ears up because we know they ain't met no aliens.
Yeah. He looks like a cult member, which yeah, is what is yeah. the best part
I think
about
it was,
Spock.
Yeah,
it was intentional.
Necessarily
and
like,
it totally works because it's San Francisco.
Well, and Kirk looks like he's on leave from the military.
Yeah. Yeah.
And Spock looks like a cult member and they're hanging out with each mm-hmm. other. And you're like, this is totally the opposite of mm-hmm. each other. And that, and then, you know, teaming up Sulu and Scotty and McCoy.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, they did a lot of dynamic that they had never done before.
Yeah.
I mean, Chekhov and Uhura had always been like, you know, buddies. And that, I mean, it goes all the way back to Tribbles, like the mm-hmm. Trouble of Tribbles and that, them hanging out in the bar together.
Right.
But it's like, you know, putting them in a situation where it's like the most dangerous of the situations.
Yeah.
You give that to Chekhov and Uhura and it's like, They'll take care of it.
You give that to the two people who absolutely should not be yeah. doing that. Like, you know, no, and you know, watching them interact with 20th century Earth.
Yeah.
The scene on the bus.
Yeah.
With the boombox. Kurt
Thacker was the name of yeah. that actor.
And
he was, I think he was Leonard Nimoy's assistant.
Oh, okay.
And he was just one of those guys where he had that look.
Yeah.
And Leonard Nimoy was like, just do this.
Yeah, he had the spiky, like
spiky
super
mohawk.
Spiky
yeah,
mohawk and like the leather and like he looked like Dee Snider.
Yeah.
And you know, he's like, can you turn that down? Like Kirk is like, can you turn that down? And the guy turns it up and
flips
like,
him off.
Flips
him off and turns it up.
And turns it
he
up.
He just looks up at Spock and is like, just that look. Yeah. And you're like, oh, what? Spock's about to nerf pinch this guy.
And Spock reaches, just casually reaches over and nerf pinches him. And the guy passes out and hits his head on the boombox and turns it off. And everyone on the bus cheers, you know.
Watching them interact just, you know, on a street, like, you know, Kirk's like, just hang out. I'm going to go over to this antique store and, you know, get us some money.
Yeah.
Because they didn't have any money. And he turns around and they're all like just standing there looking really weird. He goes, you look like a cadet review. It's like, just act casual.
I always remember from that is I always think of when Han told Chewie to fly casual.
Yeah.
And it's like, you know, it's kind of, I know it's like not the same thing,
casual.
But just be casual. And then they do the whole like hand on your hip casual. Like,
right. Well, and then the worst one is Kirk. I mean, Kirk's like, you know, saying stuff that you're like, you're totally like, you know, doing this backwards. Double dumbass on you.
Yeah. And you know, the whole thing where they're like, okay, we have to find a couple of humpback whales.
That's easy.
How do we transport these things back in a Klingon bird of prey?
Yeah.
That is the least like cargo driven ship they could have.
Well, yeah. So, well, part of the bird of prey is just a cargo hold.
Right.
And as that was like, how do we get these whales in there?
So how do they get the water? How do they stand for the pressure? How do they let it go through space travel? And so Scotty invents transparent aluminum, which consequently enough, there's a company that made a very similar substance not too long ago. Like in the last like
Star Trek, inspiring technology.
Well, I mean, like I'm reading stuff off my iPad right now. That's the pad. Like, you know, but anyway, so they find Dr. Jillian Taylor.
Yeah.
Who?
Catherine Hicks.
Yeah. Like, I had a crush on her.
Yeah.
And it's like, but then I look back and I'm like, what was I thinking? But I do remember
very attractive.
She was, but I don't know, man. She's just not my type.
It's Andy's mom from Child's Play.
Yes.
Yeah.
But they go on this date, and all, like, the other thing I remember from their date is that pizza looked so good.
Yeah.
Like, it's like, man, I just want, like right now I'm thinking
like,
about it and I
want
like, pizza.
What location were they shooting in so I can go to that restaurant?
I would like to go to that restaurant. Pizza. I'm sure that restaurant has closed since.
Yeah, maybe.
And so she was that interesting, like, 20th century point of view character, right?
Yeah.
Because here she gets thrust into this situation. She has this guy who's vague and creepy and wearing a toupee.
And the only thing she's worried about is her whales.
Is her whales. And he's like, what if I told you I could guarantee they'd be safe? And she's like, well, shit, yeah, let's do it.
So tell me why, how, how, why, where are you from? What, you know, the whole conversation that he's from Iowa, but he works in space. And that is like, you know, one of those best conversations at a table in a movie.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, their date is one of the highlights of this movie. And, you know, so they work it out. They figure it out. You know, obviously, Chekhov gets hurt pretty badly. And
with one of the best conversations, where are you from? And, you know, the whole interview with him is like, we're done. And he's like, oh, so I can go.
Yeah.
No, you can't go.
Pavel Andreevich.
Yeah.
Serial number. but when he gets hurt and then Bones shows up. And like, just like,
he's at the hospital when he gives the old lady the pill, and her kidneys grow back, because her kidneys had like deteriorated to the point that
failing.
She was dying, And just the antics with McCoy in the hospital,
just
calls it the Spanish Inquisition at one point.
He's like, these are barbarians, and it's like, that's exactly how a 23rd century doctor would look at that, you know.
Well, I mean, the whole idea of drilling into somebody's head to release the pressure. And it's like, by his time, they just have push a button and do that. And it's like, you know, he's looking at him like a bunch of assholes. It's like, what are you doing?
And then as they're wheeling Chekhov out, the old lady stands up and she's like doing a jig.
Pretty much.
Know? But I love that.
Doctor, gave me a pill and my kidneys grew back.
I love it's the take two of these and call me in the morning. Yeah. Like, you know, so... the hospital scene is great. Like, I don't know. I just think, like you said, this is a very Star Trek movie, right? And I think that's why, for me, it's the top.
Yeah.
Like, yours is the Wrathicon.
Yeah.
And
because it's the whole other side of the Star Trek.
You're right. It is. But for me, like I said, like, this came along. This
is the first one I've seen in a theater.
Yeah. Yeah, this came along for me. Like, you know, I'm just a couple years younger than you. But, like, it was a more formative time, I think, for me. So, like, you know, and this was one where it's like, okay, we're going to go to the video store. What do you want to watch? Star Trek 4.
Yeah.
You know, like, well, what do you want to do tonight? I don't know. Let's watch Star Trek 4. You know, it was kind of, it's so rewatchable.
Right.
And because they go back in time, right, it holds up.
Yeah.
Like, it's unfortunately not.
A lot of time travel in the 80s.
Yeah. Yeah.
A lot of time travel in the 80s.
It's unfortunately not streaming anywhere right now for free, but I did watch it not too long
ago. Just go buy it.
Yeah, well.
This one's one that I say this should be in your collection.
Yeah.
If you're a movie buff, this should be in your collection. This is, you know, a classic.
Yeah, I had the VHS and I just never got the DVD. Yeah. So but yeah, so then the whole adventure of getting them back to Earth.
Well, finding them because,
well, they, you know, get released.
They release them
and
early.
They still had their trackers and, you know,
never seen a guy get smacked that hard before. And I'm like, did he really take that hit?
Yeah.
Cause she's angry and she smacks her boss. And it's like, dude, did he really take that hit?
If he did, he's a man. But like the other thing is these whales are in the wild for what? Like hours. Right. And there's already people hunting them.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Like, was whaling that bad in the 80s?
Oh, yeah, it was.
Like, you know, I mean, like, 1986, I'm 9 years old.
Yeah.
You know,
I just remember reading, like, you know, I had a grandpa who wasn't a blood grandpa, but, you know, and when I would go to his house, he always had National Geographic.
Okay.
So I remember reading National Geographic articles about that time, you know, about the whaling and all that stuff. And, yeah, it was really bad. I mean, the humpbacks were close to extinction. I think the blue whale was close to extinction at that point.
Mm-hmm.
So it was, it was a bad time to be a whale. Like, literally.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So, like, you know, they find the whales, they track them down.
Yep.
They beam them
into the
and
hold,
the water into the hold. And, you know, there was this moment of calm.
Yeah,
where they go into space and they're getting ready to make the jump.
Well, and the whole thing where I think, like, that's a cool scene when they beam them in, and, you know, Scotty's like, "Admiral, there be whales here," and I think he's like, in his mind, he was thinking like, "Shit, it really worked.
Yeah,
it really worked.
Wait a second, this worked. Oh, yes,
it's like awesome." I think it was always funny because Scotty had a reputation of miracle worker, and it's like, half the time he was flying by the seat of his pants, and it's like, if this works, then I am a miracle worker. And it's like, just that look on his face is like, oh my God, it really worked.
So, but yeah, and then there's the scene with her with the whales.
Yeah.
Like, you know, it was just a real touchy moment. And then they make their jump around the sun. And this is the other thing that gets me, or one of the things that gets me about this movie. They make the jump around the sun, and they're immediately in Earth's orbit.
Yeah, it was fast.
It was like, okay,
we're
like,
traveling at warp speed.
Yeah, it's like this
suspend
that,
your
I know, yeah. But
it's literally Star Trek.
They make the jump and then they're crashing into the ocean.
Wow. Yeah, you just hear that wow. I guess we're at Earth.
Yep. and so, you know, again, they crash, and, you know,
The Golden Gate Bridge like almost gets nailed every Star Trek movie
every
that's
Star
on
Trek
Earth,
movie. And they avoid it. We did miss one thing.
Yeah.
Sulu getting the
helicopter.
Huey was a great scene.
Well,
too.
Do you know there's a deleted scene in there too?
I did not know that.
When they're walking down the street talking about how they're gonna, you know, get these whales onto the Klingon bird of prey.
Right.
And there's the big sign that says Yellow Pages, and a door opens and a man speaking Japanese is yelling at a kid running by.
Okay.
There's supposed to be a scene where Sulu speaks Japanese to the kid, and it's his great-great-great-great grandfather.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and, like, literally he realizes that is a descendant, and, you know, just says something to McCoy about it, and they keep walking. I think it was in the novelization.
Okay.
I remember it from the novelization. But I'm like, that would have just been a fun little scene, but the scenes with him with the Huey and, like, I've flown one of these. When he's talking to the pilot, like, I've flown one of these before.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's like, okay, alrighty.
I mean, he is a pilot.
Well, yeah. So it's like, the two things you know about Sulu is he could fly anything, and he liked guns.
And he could fence.
Yeah. Yeah, he was in the armament.
Yeah.
Yeah, the weapons and that.
But no, so they get there, and obviously they free the whales, and, like, almost, like, it doesn't happen instantly. They're right? They're like, well, why aren't they singing?
Yeah.
I don't know. They're just not singing. They'll sing when they're damn good, like, and ready to sing.
Whales are like, this water's pretty clean.
Yeah. Where's all the plastic?
Yeah, exactly. It's been 10 minutes. We haven't been harpooned yet.
So, so some interesting things, though, about the production of this movie. Apparently, when Nimoy and Bennett came to Shatner, they said, hey, we don't want to have a clear-cut villain.
Yeah.
We want a lighter movie. We want it to be a Star Trek movie. And William Shatner was unwilling to return originally.
Oh.
I did not realize that. But,
Yeah, because, he wanted everybody to meet God.
Yeah, well, so he actually got a pay increase when he signed on to star. They each received, Nimoy and Shatner each received $2.5 million for the film.
Wow.
Despite Shatner's doubts, they selected this time travel story. And
he seemed to have fun. I mean, from what you see on screen and what we know, what might have happened behind the scenes, it seemed like they were all having fun.
Yeah.
I think they were having fun. I would hope that,
in all honesty,
I'll travel back in time to when they're shooting this movie and, it's going to be a paradox on a paradox.
Nice.
Yeah.
I think he probably just held out for more money.
I think at the time he might have been working on TJ Hooker.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just one of those things where, he's working a full-time television series. And then they're like, oh, you want to do this movie? And he's like, I'm working. Mm-hmm. For Shatner, it's always been, he's a working actor.
Yeah, so he's always
got a job. Yeah, he's not worried about something else.
Yeah.
So,
but yeah, I mean, like I said, all in, this is my favorite of the movies.
Other Star Trek movies,
followed by First Contact and probably Beyond, which I'll have a better judgment on November 1st when that comes out. But yeah.
Were you gonna go back on what you said?
No, probably not.
Okay.
I mean, I'm really looking forward to watching it.
Yeah.
Like four more times. So, but overall, what are your thoughts of this?
This is a very enjoyable movie. I mean, this is kind of what got me into Star Trek fandom.
Yeah. You've said that a few times on the show.
Next Generation premiered the next year after this movie came out. And, it's just one of those things where I think that this put me on a different path of thought in that, because it was the whole save the whales was a common thing in the 80s. But, seeing these people from a future
save the whales
where they didn't have whales. And
right.
It was going to cause their world to be destroyed. Mm-hmm. And it's like to come back and say, if you guys wouldn't have done, if you were to stop this.
Right.
Then, we wouldn't have this problem in the future.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think that that's a thing that a lot of people should look at with a lot of things nowadays. I think Star Trek does have a good message, as much as people go, oh, Star Trek, blah, blah, blah. Star Trek's always had good messages, moral messages and that, depending on what your moral compass is. But, I think that, discovering this in my early teens.
Yeah. This is Star Trek at its peak.
Yeah.
Like, to be 100% just.
This is one of the best examples of what Star Trek is.
What it should be.
Yeah.
So, all right. Cool. Yeah.
Do you have any? Leonard Nimoy.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
He's going to be very missed in this franchise.
The best director of the movies.
More than anything, I feel like
him and Nicholas Meyer.
He was the steward of the franchise. Yeah. He was the who kept it going and on point and on target. And when he wasn't the creative voice leading, that's where it tended to fall apart. It'll be really interesting to see what happens going forward.
Yeah,
without him.
They did a really good job with Beyond, but it still was feeling the effects of Leonard passing. And obviously Zachary Quinto had built a very, very respectful and, you know, affectionate relationship with the man, you know, kind of a father figure for him. And I am very curious to see Adam for the love of Spock.
Yep.
And see, you know, what he says about his father, because I think Leonard inspired Adam to become a director. Adam directed a good amount of Star Trek The Next Generation episodes.
Yeah.
And that, and just, you know, to see what their relationship was like. And, you know, more, I'm more curious about Leonard now than I ever was. And, you know, it is because he's not around anymore.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, yeah, getting to meet him was awesome, but, you know, I think it would have been cool to hear more from him.
Yeah.
And that it's a shame that, you know, he passed on. But
yeah. So now in the, if you could talk to anyone who's passed away, he's probably at the top of your list.
He's one of the people. Yeah.
All right. Well, on that note, if you like what you hear from us, we are on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, most podcatching apps. And if those apps have a rating system, a 5-star review on those apps would help us greatly, and we would appreciate it.
Yeah.
So, yeah. The other thing is we have new episodes that come out every Friday. Did you know that?
Yes.
Every
Friday. Obviously I did, but
I wasn't sure if you knew or not. Sometimes
I send the holographic image over.
Yeah,
them doing. And then sometimes it's the clone, and other times it's the android.
Awesome. But no. So
you were so confused for a minute. Like, I was like, "What is he sending? What an android are you doing? And a clone
oh, God,
over?
An android and a
how
clone?
How does he have an android and a clone that look like him?
It's pretty easy."
Don't you worry about it.
Yeah. All right. But yeah, so we're infamouspodcast.com. We're Infamous Podcast on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. You are on social media at
Instagram and Twitter, Johnny Podorf.
And I'm on most social networks as Brian Tudor. And yeah, if you have questions for us, we are at contact@infamouspodcast.com. Let us know what you think. Where does Star Trek IV stand in your list of favorites? Well, not you, I'm asking.
Yeah.
You know.
For me, it's in the top 5.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool.
I don't remember my list, but I know it's in the top 5.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's one of my favorites.
It's because it's a very good movie.
Yeah. It's a very good movie.
All right. Well, on that note, live long and prosper.
Yeah. Next month, it'll be Star Trek III.
The Search for... That's one I have to watch again because I haven't watched that one in a while.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So,
yeah.
But yeah. Awesome. All right. Well, have a great day, night, evening, weekend, and we will see you soon.
Later.